Russia game was really frustrating, wasn't it? Because my memory is that this, again, this young team played really, really well. Sam Vokes bullied his centre-backs. He was basically playing up front on his own. And again, was a really encouraging performance. Ledley, he scores. I think he had, if I remember. It was the champion kits by this point. Bale had a great game. Yeah, frustrating. It was just one of those, well, you know, Russia, good team. It's no disgrace in losing. But again, it was just another opportunity to claim a scalp.
I mean,
gone begging.
We were good in that game, I think. We were really... We were really unlucky. The goal we saw is part of that Gareth Bale emergence. He just drives between two players and squares the ball for Ledley for our goal. And it's really, really top stuff. Although didn't he miss a penalty as well? He wins a penalty, which he then misses.
He did, first half.
And then like their winner, I think, comes from like Hennessy makes a great save, but it falls unlucky to their player and it's getting on towards the end of the game. So we were really unlucky. You know, I have these days of my age remembering the details of individual games, but I can still remember that game being a pretty good performance given the tough circumstances and the number of young players we had.
Just to go back to the under-21s, they had two games against Romania to finish that group. The France game was at the start of the group. I think they had a doubleheader against France at the start of the group and finished with a doubleheader against Romania. So we had a chance to seal the top spot in the group at home in the August, and that was the same day as the Georgia friendly. So the under-21s took priority, and Flynn basically, for perhaps the only time during his reign, he was allowed to pick whoever he wanted. So we went into that game with probably the strongest under-21 team we've ever had. Bale played, Ramsey played. It was Vokes and Shed Evans up front. Dave Edwards was captain. Joe Allen was on the bench, I think. You know, that's how strong the team was. Hennessy was in goal. We played really well, but lost the game 1-0. It was a bit unlucky. So then we have this away game in Romania, boiling hot conditions, with what Flynn called, in effect, a sort of second string under 21 team, because the senior team was playing Russia the next day. So, you know, obviously he couldn't pick Bale for that game because Bale was needed for the seniors. Sam Vokes, the same, etc., etc. Although Ramsey, who was still just 17, did play for him. Ramsey just took charge, ran the game. We won 3-0. Apparently we were that good, the Romanian fans applauded us off. So despite the result in Moscow, another one like that France-Germany under-21 senior sort of doubleheader a year or so before, where it was a kind of promising sort of 24-hour period or so for Welsh football, in that the under-21s gone to Romania, hammered them, and a very young senior team had competed, at least, with one of the best teams in Europe at that time, because this was Russia just back from the Euro 2008 semi-final. So it's another one of those sort of little jolts that we got every now and then during the Toshak years, where you thought, okay, maybe we're onto something now.
We absolutely battered them, didn't we, at the race course, and somehow managed to lose. I remember watching that in the afternoon, because the Sturridge game was at the Liberty, catching it in a pub down there before the game, if my memory's correct. Like you say, Gaz, it's hard to remember some of the details, eh? That Russia game, I mean, the only other thing to really say is that Toshak got pelters, didn't he, for bringing Steve Evans on late to shore up defence, probably to try to see out the draw, and then their substitute. It's Pavel Progrebniak, I think you pronounce it, goes on in the 74th minute. Evans goes on a couple of minutes later, so it appears to be a defensive substitution, and it's Progrebniak of all people who gets the winner. Just clocked here, Joe Ledley played that night in Moscow, his 24th cap. He was still in 21 by that point. And of course, one of those players that doesn't tend to get mentioned in that under-21 crop, but of course, technically would have been still eligible for a whole load of those games, but of course have been elevated a lot sooner. I mean, a couple of years older than Ramsey at 17 and so on, but still might well have been part of that crop. Certainly in another area, when you look at the likes of Davis and Kumas and Gabbard, and you know, weren't getting elevated by Hughes to the senior squad. Collins, another one, till 20, 21, 22 in some cases. Bledley, 24 caps even by the age of 21 is pretty impressive.
He was great that night in Russia as well. Really, really good. Funny to think about his evolution through the team actually now, because at that point he was playing quite a sort of attacking role, driving into the box and you know, gets him his goal there. And years later, we'll be depending on him protecting the back four. Yeah. And he's done it all in a Wales shirt, fair play to him.
And of course, had Giggs stayed on and started to replicate his role for Wales as he was for Manchester United in midfield, he wouldn't have been on 24 caps by the point of that game, I don't suppose. And all through this calendar year up to this point, there's one player who's been out injured, and that's James Collins, who had done his cruciate very early on in the year, and he came back for this game. Again, we talked about Kumas at the start of the year, putting in one of those all-time great individual performances for Wales. Collins pretty much comes back. I think it is his first game back, certainly his first team game. He'd had a couple of West Ham reserve runouts, came back. He was an absolute colossus that night, having had almost a year out with, you know, a serious knee injury. Just wanted to put a shout out because, again, Collins is one of those players I'd run-ins with, you know, not just Toshak as a manager. You know, at that point, Ashley Williams has only got, he's winning his eighth cap. So very much the junior partner, which of course rolled on a couple of years, and it, you know, it was the other way around, I suppose, in some respects. But Collins was absolute, as I say, absolute colossus that night.
He was superb. And it was another, similar to the game against Russia in Moscow, where we played well. It was a commendable performance. There was a lot to admire about it. Bellamy was also very good. It just got lacked a bit of support, and we missed a striker, and still, you know, for all the promise that Sam Vokes was showing at that point. So it just, you know, we didn't that many chances. And then, I can't remember, the Hamburg midfielder scores a worldie, doesn't he? He just twists and turns a bit, smacks his ball into the top corner.
Tchaikovsky,
yeah, that's it. But it was good, yeah, we played really well. I can remember Bellamy after the game. I think Network BBC showed that game, bizarrely. So he had like Mark Bright doing the co-commentary, which is a bizarre choice because he didn't seem to know who half our team were. and then he seemed like surprised that the likes of Greg Morgan were able to actually sort of compete against these great German players that, you know. And I was like, well, you know, did you not do a bit of research? You know, he's taken part in victories over the likes of Norway and such. But also Alan Shearer was perhaps one of the pundits in the studio as well. And they were full of praise for us, to be fair to them. They were like, you know, that was a really good Wales performance considering how inexperienced the team is. And it was, I think, the interviewer put this to Bellamy, oh, you must be really proud of that display. And Bellamy sort of said, well, yeah, but we've been saying that for a while. We're not getting results. And that's kind of how I felt after that game as well. It's like, how long can there be promise without actually some sort of delivery? And I could fully understand Bellamy's frustration after that, because we were good, but we had nothing to show for it.
Can I read you something from the match report on that Germany game? Gunter had an unexpected chance to level when Bellamy's cross found him well placed in the area, but his shot was blocked and Wales' final chance was gone. Just wonder how different the era could have been if Gunter could have pulled his finger out a little bit more in front of goal in those days. You know, I wasn't remembering it clearly, but Patton was clearly there in these early days. And so no, he's got to take a look at himself, hasn't he?
Gaz, you're completely trashing the reputation
of a Welsh
legend.
I don't feel good about it, but you know. I'm stumbling on things in my research. What can I say?
I'm not sure you are trashing it, if anything. I mean, it's been this sort of glorious failure all these years that he's never even got close to scoring. But actually, you're uncovering the fact that, you know, he could have probably bagged four or five by now. I mean, he wins a couple of penalties, doesn't he? Against Switzerland under Speed and Scotland under Coleman. So,
he
has got forward a little bit more than maybe we give him credit for.
Maybe that's why Coleman didn't want him to cross that ball for Vokes against Belgium. He wanted them to actually drive into the box to win a penalty.
Yeah.
Just before we move on, if you get a chance to have a look at any footage from a few of these games where Sam Vokes is playing, just look how lean and mobile he looks as a young footballer as well. Because, again, most of my sort of idea of Sam Vokes in a Wales shirt, and I don't mean this as a criticism, is those more recent years of relative success. But as a young man, he could get about, and he had a little bit more of a little bit more pace, and that game against Azerbaijan, his goal, the physicality of him is completely different to the player you'll later become.
Again, just following on the pattern then of the night before or the day before one of these big qualifiers, there's a key under 21 fixture, is, of course, the Wales-England playoffs for the under-21 European Championships in 2009, in which Aaron Ramsey probably, I mean, to Cardiff fans, obviously, there was that run to the cup final the previous season, so or earlier in that calendar year. So he was pretty much on a lot of people's radar, but certainly for people over the border, that was the night that he, if they were paying any attention to any 21 games, of course, but, you know, if they were, that was the night that he really marked his arrival.
Villa Park, or the Undenham Park, both games he was superb. Really. He played a part in both of Simon Church's goals at Ninian Park, I remember. First leg, we lost 3-2, but it was a good performance. And the difference in experience between England's and the 21 team and ours is just, it was light years. So I guess any sort of neutral fan looking at it and looking at sort of tallying up the Premier League appearance caps for both teams would have thought we were on for an absolute hammering. I think it might only have been Ramsey if that under-21 team who'd actually played in the Premier League for us. Whereas the England team was, you know, Mark Noble, James Milner, Bom Lahore, Stephen Taylor, who might have been Newcastle's captain by that point already. And then second leg, Villa Park. He just pulls this extraordinary goal out of the hat. It was, magical, incredible moment, really, because we were getting dominated. And you just thought, okay, this is just going to fizzle out to nothing. And left foot, his weaker foot, with absolutely nothing on, just hits this absolutely extraordinary half volley. And then 5 minutes later, just runs at the defence, slips his ball through to Church. Church lifts it over heart with 2-1 up. On the night, this delirium where I was stood. Just absolute mayhem. For that sort of few minutes, we were leading 2-1. You know, a few of our fans got a bit carried away and then went on to the pitch invasion under 21 match. Just shows how kind of like desperate for any sort of crumbs we were at that time. I think it shows kind of how perhaps mental you have to be a sort of long-term Wales fan. And then England equalised, that sort of kills the momentum that we were gaining at that point. But overall, it was still a brilliant performance. And we had a chance to send it into extra time towards the end. Sam Vokes hit the post. We were just as good as them for most of that match with a much younger, much more inexperienced team. And Ramsey was the one who just stood out a mile. And that was the point of, certainly for me, of thinking, here's the guy we've been waiting for. Here's the playmaker that we've always kind of struggled against. We've always come up against this kind of player. Hadji, Stoichkov, Schweinsteiger, we talked about him before, Lippmanen, that kind of string puller for the opposition in midfield. We'd never really had one in my time of watching Wales. And it seemed finally that this kid was going to be it.
Who said this about him then? And this is a member of the Wales squad. Who said this? I cannot recall as much fuss about a young Wales player maybe since Ryan Giggs.
Bellamy?
Yeah, Bellamy. You've been around the camp for, you know, a good few years by this point. So that's probably a fairly decent judgment to consider. And of course, the following game, he gets his first cap out in Denmark in a friendly. It's beginning to herald Kumas's way out of the squad. Collison, of course, is also beginning to show some real promise as well. I'm sure we'll return to him a bit later. That was a good performance out in Denmark as well, because that Denmark team was, you know, it was a decent team.
Yeah, I didn't see this game. I was out at a gig that night. I remember it was Kills, if you're interested in that. And I remember he'd watched the game, texting to say 1-1-0. Good performance. Bellamy scored. Jack Collison was very good, apparently, that night. It was there was another promising one, wasn't it? And Ramsey coming on to make his debut. Yeah, it was another kind of bit of a shift forward towards the team that we would become over the next few years.
Because my memory at the time was that it felt like, oh, at last, he's got his cap. Because had it not really been for those playoffs, he'd have probably been elevated a little bit earlier, the under-21 playoffs. As you alluded to earlier, an Arsenal player by this point, he'd probably hung too much on his young shoulders. It was inevitable, I suppose.
Yeah, perhaps. But I also think the text that expectations weren't particularly high at that point in terms of kind of crowds we were getting. It wasn't like when sort of an 18 or 19-year-old kid comes along makes a debut for England, all of a sudden they're the next Bobby Moore or Jimmy Greaves or whoever. And tabloids go mental. Because in Wales, the Welsh football team at least just doesn't receive that kind of coverage. So in a way, but perhaps that just, you know, helps someone like an Aaron Ramsey ease into international football. I mean, obviously there was excitement and there was, you know, amongst the hardcore, but how many were actually in the hardcore at that point? I mean, we played the following year, we played a friendly in Llanelli against Estonia, and there were 4,000 there. There wasn't a huge amount of excitement amongst the Welsh public about these young players, even though certainly those who were kind of paying attention could see something happening. So in a way, I'm not complaining about it, because it's perhaps helpful to not have this huge hype, a bit of a stone around your neck. We've seen it, you know, 100 times with young English players. Maybe it's healthier actually to not have so much expectation.
Absolutely agree with Leon on that. Think about any team, including us, I guess, maybe in more recent years, if your relatively successful team, next big player, gets massive sort of scrutiny. When we were doing quite well, think how high profile Ben Woodburn's emergence in the team was in, you know, not just amongst Welsh football fans, but the football watching in public more generally. It was kind of big news because he was stepping into what was then a successful team. Aaron Ramsey is able to just develop as a teenager, early first team career, without anyone that hardcore, like Leon mentioned, of a few thousand Wales fans really giving it much attention. And in fact, it's probably only that horrible injury a year or so later that changes that.
A sickener, wasn't it, when it comes to that? Yeah, so next game then is Finland at home. Oh, and it's another dreary, abject performance against a really poor side. I mean, you've covered this in the last one, Gaz, the Slovakias, the Czech Republic, the number of teams that we should have been competing with against Cyprus would be another one, clearly. That wasn't a great Finland side. There were some good players in it, but they were a long way past the best. We didn't turn up. In particular, Jason Kumas didn't turn up and never turned up again. And there was very much a sense that there was some, you know, there was a baton being passed on here from Kumas to Ramsey. Ramsey came on as a substitute in this one. That was another horrible game, wasn't it?
It was. We were so poor in that game. And although it was nothing amazing about the few months before that, think of the games we've just been talking through, and we'd started 2008 quite well. And so out of all the Toshak era, it did feel like a time when, okay, things are going okay. I think Toshak had been given a 2-year extension not long before the game. So it seemed like another one of those moments, a little bit like that Cyprus game where you think, was that the point maybe where we needed to shift direction, where we needed someone else and some new ideas coming in, and we let that one pass. And I think at this period, maybe because we thought, well, the last few results haven't been so bad, we let another point pass where we should really have been looking to, well, good, what's been achieved with bringing the young players through, but to take this squad on needs somebody else. And we get into another pretty poor run after that.
And bearing in mind he set himself that 2010 World Cup as a sort of yardstick against which to judge him, if there's still any people that doubt the size of his ego, he writes in the programme notes, any hopes of qualification will evaporate for the side beaten this afternoon, because Finland are in the last chance saloon as well. I mean, talk about creating a rod for your own back. I mean, even if it was patently clear, I wouldn't have thought you necessarily go ahead and write that, but he just shows no qualms in heaping the pressure on himself, I don't suppose.
And there was a lot of airing the disappointment and the frustration of that game in public afterwards as well. Bellamy was quite brutal in his assessment of the game. Widely reported in the news that there was quite a sort of tense heart-to-heart amongst all the players and staff after the game about what they were doing the setup and how it was going on. And you got a big sense, like you did after the Cyprus game, that this was an unhappy international setup and you know, not a united squad like the sort of thing we've seen in more recent years.
No. Bellamy's asked, where do Wales go next? And he says, God knows.
That was a brilliant post-match interview. Well, I mean, brilliant, perhaps the wrong word, but it is memorable, let's say. Didn't he say, we didn't think Finland were good enough to score against us or something? Brutally honest. And he said, oh, that's just two poor teams who don't have a hope in hell of getting to the World Cup. And, well, he was right. Because it was a poor game again. We were poor. Well, actually, I disagree with Gaz there. To quote Mickey Thomas, I thought we were worse than that. We were fucking appalling. Finland were just slightly better. and Lippmanen stood the show, as one journalist put it, because he couldn't run at that point. And this was like off the back of beating Denmark and Norway in friendlies, and Denmark and Norway were, you know, better teams than Finland at this point. So you think, okay, we're at home, crunch game. This is, you know, when we've got to step up and get a result here. And it was another one of those it felt like we'd taken perhaps one step forward, and that game was a definite sort of two steps back. It was just a really depressing.
Yeah, it could have been more as well. They should have had a penalty. We cleared off the line. Lippmann, and just he was. I mean, that quote sort of stood as ragged or whatever. It was spot on the money, because he was just pottering around the halfway line. Both of the goals come from him just sort of towing the ball into the path of an on running attacker, like inch perfect, under no sort of challenge from any of our players. And we might come to this in a little bit. We give them exactly the same treatment in the return fixture later on in this campaign as well. So we don't even learn any lessons from that game. And he was a great player, Lippmann, but you've got to ask questions about letting a player like that run the show so completely, you know, given his advancing years.
Hyvin pystyy pitämään palossa Litmanen. Hyvä Juhassonin syöttö Jeremenko juniorille. Litmanen. Ei ole Juhasson paitsiosta, Juhasson! Ei muuta kuin pallomaaliin! Jää! Sinne menee! Joonatan Juhasson! 1-0 Suomelle! Jari Littasen syötöstä!
It occurs to me at that time, reading back, doing the research for this, the journalist job was quite easy, wasn't it? At that point, you're Bellamy and Toshak just were giving them so much material. The stuff on the park wasn't too great to write about, but the stuff beforehand and immediately after was usually incendiary. So qualification is over. This was the one that he, in terms of campaigns, was the one he had suggested he should be judged on. And when I stuck this out on Twitter a while back, Tosh Van, to be fair to him, even Tosh Van would concede, quote unquote, one of his biggest criticisms was the request to be judged on 2010, because we were in such a mess, Welsh football, for that target to be realistic. I'm not sure about the mess bit, because, you know, he'd had a lot of things that he'd asked for. A lot of that talent is coming through. We'd had several campaigns by that point, but that's the yardstick, because it's the yardstick he suggested.
On part one of this podcast, we did talk about how we had gone a long time without winning a competitive game before Toshak took over. But I think the idea that it was a quote-unquote mess, I would disagree with. We were a mess after the Bobby Gould era. We weren't a mess. We were just a team in need of results and new tactical ideas, I would say. I guess that he's trying to make a point about the style of football that we were playing under Hughes compared to what we were sort of trying to do under Toshak, at least. And maybe that's sort of come to in the conclusion, at least. In a sense, you know, I think Toshak, he didn't need to kind of say that about that we're aiming for 2010. You know, you should perhaps every aiming to win it. You know, you target every campaign in a sense. And I can kind of see then why certain players like Danik and Davis, if you listen to the one of the pod that Ellis did, talking to him as Richard. He felt that they had a good team at the time and it could have achieved so much more. And, you know, if you've got talking about the future the whole time, you think, well, we're going to get a chance to play in a tournament and I think we've got a good enough team to give it a go. I can understand the frustrations of those players, you know, like Abdon Davis.
Yeah. So we lose to Germany in the next game. Sorry, no great shame, but again, it's another hard luck story.
My abiding memory of that evening was Toshak crying during the anthem, and I thought, okay, this is it. He's going to walk after this game. This is his final game, his final involvement with Wales. That's why he's so emotional. He didn't, but but that's what I remember of that night.
Because he wasn't the person to overly show his emotions, and often was quite gruff, I suppose, quite combative, quite liked conflict, clearly. I suppose conversely, though, this is the point at which we probably, you know, we experienced finally a qualifying win. It had been a while, but it's the game that he's most proud of almost as Wales manager out in Azerbaijan? Because both the friendly game before it was a little bit of a warm-up at Llanelli, the first game down there. 1-0 win over Estonia and the Azerbaijan game. Two of the youngest, if not the youngest, starting 11s that we'd ever put out. And he was incredibly proud of them, wasn't he?
Not just that, Russ. I was at that game in Llanelli against Estonia. I mean, I've put the question out there on the internet a few times and I've never been able to get any sort of definitive answer, but I wonder if that might be the youngest team to ever be a senior international, because it was just ridiculously young, that team. It was the one sort of veteran on the field was Earnshaw, who scored the goal from the penalty spot. I think he was 27. Perhaps then the next oldest player might have been Ashley Williams at 23 or 24. Other than that, it was teenagers and 21-year-old. 21 or 22-year-old Joe Ledley was captain. Ramsey, Collison, Bale, still a teenager, Gunter. Joe Allen comes on to make his debut. That's a significant one.
And Andy King.
Andy King and Simon Church as well.
Yeah.
Their debuts. But I mean, you know, there's 140 odd caps there, you know, to be fair to King and Church as well. You know, they did play a part in some of the success that followed. But you know, obviously Joe Allen is an all-time great, and that was his debut. So that's a significant moment. And then we went away to Azerbaijan with that very, very young team. And, and Bale didn't go to Azerbaijan. Is my memory correct there? I don't know if you can look that up. He played against Estonia, but then didn't go away.
You are right.
So no Simon Davis, no Bellamy, no Danny Gavin, no James Collins. And we still managed to win... I know Gareth Bale, obviously. We still managed to win out in Azerbaijan. Okay, not a particularly renowned footballing nation. Incredibly young team, and they dig out a result. I think he can be justifiably proud of that one. I think even the most hardcore Toshak critic should give him a bit of credit for that particular result.
Yeah, the game against Estonia, Bose Myhill starts in goal, so that probably nudges the average age up a little bit. As you say, Earnshaw, but both of those go off quite early on. Hennessy comes on for Myhill. Chet Evans comes on for Earnshaw. So actually, when you throw in the other substitutions, as you mentioned a few there, the average age of that finishing 11 is incredibly young. So, you're right. Ledley was captain at times. Toshak went through captains, and we touched on this before. Yes, it was about the consistent availability of players. But... you sense there wasn't a huge number of leaders, or there was too few leaders in too many of his squads available to him. And lo and behold, another August friendly, in which we don't do very well. We lose 2-1, and of course, a year later, we play them again in a qualifier, which we inevitably go to. But it's the same policy. It's playing as many of these youngsters as possible. Gabardon's back in, and James Collins back in. There's the starting time. Oh.
Can you hear me?
Sorry, guys, yeah. I hadn't realised I muted you, sorry.
Oh, mate, the fucking insight I've been trying to offer for the last 10 minutes, mate, you won't believe it, but it's gone now. It's lost.
My sausage fingers, I must have clicked mute, sorry.
are you actually recording this, Russ, by the way?
Well, I was going to say on the Estonia and Azerbaijan games, and you can edit this out if it feels like it's a bit of an issue we've sort of laboured to death already. But all the credit due that we talked about, you know, young teams getting those wins is good against two poor teams. But Toshak can't resist at that point pitting this new generation of players against the old guard. So when we win in Estonia, yes, he's pleased for the new players, but he can't resist the opportunity to hark back to the Finland game and have a little bit of a pop. So he says something along the lines of, prior to the Finland game, we hadn't seen Kumas, Davis and Fletcher for 6 months. I should have maybe just gone with the younger players for that game because they'd done all right when they'd come in before that. Which is all a little bit misleading because there'd only been two games in those 6 months that Fletcher and Kumas had missed. Again, it's this kind of needless pitting the more experienced players in the squad against this new generation he's trying to bring through. I think those successful managers, they create a transition whereby the young players learn from the older pros. I would, however, kind of qualify that by saying you're absolutely right. You say about what you say about the lack of leaders. These experienced senior professionals are not well-established, top-level, big personalities either. You know, but their players have been around, and maybe, you know, the likes of Fletcher and maybe deserved a little bit more than a cutting comment on the eve of his retirement from Toshack, given that he'd been there and he turned up, him and Carl Robinson, when we didn't really have options in central midfield before he was able to bring through Ledley and bring through Ramsey. So it just becomes another opportunity for Toshack to sort of double down on the unnecessary division at a time when actually, if there's anything to celebrate, it's the young players coming through. So let's just focus on that.
That ego, it's a hard thing to keep down. And then we have another of these August friendlies. So obviously we lose, but it's out in Montenegro. It's a strange fixture because we've got them in a qualifier more or less a year later. And we don't really get close. Some vote scores, it's 2-1 defeat, but that suggests that we got a little bit closer to them than we actually did.
I remember Stefan Jovetic being superb that game. Really impressed by him, which is perhaps significant in that we played them about a year or so later, and we'll come to that. But yeah, my memory of that game is Jovetic thinking, wow, what a player. I thought he was going to be a superstar, and he might have been if it hadn't been for injuries.
And Kumas announced his retirement after that game. I think we've kind of done Kumas to death a little bit now, but that's the end for him then after that Montenegro friendly.
And it was a pretty low-key ending, really, wasn't it? And I think we'd probably seen it coming. I think even I had probably seen it coming by that point. And then obviously the campaign is well and truly over, and there was time for more qualification. Lost at home to Russia, notable for which was Brian Stock's debut, where for the first half, he looked like Juan Verón. I may be misremembering it when I make that comparison. We covered Brian Stock in the burnout and fade away 11. He was great that night.
Yeah.
I read the match report on that game earlier on, and it really does. He mentions Brian Stock and mentions his good performance, but it says something like every bit the air to Carl Robinson and Carl Fletcher. And I wasn't sure whether that was praise or not, if I were to be a little bit mean about the Carls. You know?
Did I say Juan Verón? I meant Carl Verón, his less talented second cousin.
I was going to. Did he say that he's more like the poor Marden, wasn't he? Maybe a bit harsh. Oof.
And Ramsey, he plays in a formation where he's the deepest of three midfielders. In that sort of way, in recent years, whenever he's played a little bit deeper in the team, we throw hands up and say, look, that's not his role. So we are a little bit of a loss once Fletcher and Robinson have gone, and once Brian doesn't turn out to be the new Verón or anybody else for that matter, what we're going to do about protecting our defence. So poor Ramsey has carried a burden of that for a game or two before we try and come up with a new plan.
So although the campaign's over, we've still got to go out to Finland, and I guess they're not going to need a huge amount of motivating given Craig Bellamy called them, as well as us, admittedly, but he called them a poor team, even though they beat us. So their team talk has been done for them by Craig Bellamy. We're decimated with injuries. We can't even name a full bench. We score a tidy goal, but apart from that, again, it's just another one of these games where we don't really show up. Am I remembering that right?
I think that's right. You'd think the one lesson we'd have learned from the home game against Finland a few months earlier would be, well, if an ageing Jari Littmanen is given time and space on the ball in midfield, he's going to damage you. And we clearly didn't learn that lesson because it happened exactly the same again. On YouTube, they've still got the punditry from whichever channel covered it. It's Nathan Blake talking about what's gone on. And they're having a bit of a debate about whose job it is to come into that hole and pick up Littmanen. And we played three centre-backs and none of those three players were wanting to come out. And it sounds like, I don't remember it that freshly myself, but it sounds like it was Ramsey, the deepest of our midfielders. And it's funny to think now, given some of the discussions we've had about how Giggs and even Coleman at times used him, that even then people were saying, look, Ramsey's no good that deep. That's not his role. It's not going to be his job to pick up the danger man in the opposition's midfield. But as a result, Littmanen just got the run
of the
game.
That was Littmanen's 128th cap as well. Man. That's how old he was getting. He was back playing in Finland at that point. We tried to hit them on the break a lot, I seem to remember. But like you said, it was very, very frustrating. And they weren't a good side either, let's be honest. I mean, good players a long, long way past their peak.
And there we were again, you know, end of a campaign, playing a not very good team with the best we can hope for to try and finish third in the group and maybe boost our seedings, and we lose and we finish fourth and we haven't progressed by the end of that campaign.
were in exactly the same position, scrabbling around for seeding points, hopefully, and losing to teams that, you know, player for player were worse than us, despite our youth and despite all the change we've gone through. Finland had Littmanen, and that was about it. And they still made us look even more average than they were.
Looking at this as well, so Bellamy gets booked, so he ends up missing the final qualifier in Liechtenstein. But when he scores, he seems to be telling the crowd, but it's not particularly clear which bit of the crowd, but we wonder if it's the Welsh fans that he's telling to shush.
I watched the footage on YouTube today, and he scores at the end where Wales fans are behind the goal, and then he runs along the goal line and the finger goes to the lips. And it does seem that he's sending that message to the Wales fans. It looks a bit weird because, of course, the Wales fans are all going nuts and cheering because at that point, maybe we've now equalised. But it could well be, you know, the sort of pent-up frustration of some of the anger Wales fans had expressed over, you know, games long ago. So, yeah, who knows?
Bellamy, some of his celebrations are a bit strange, really. Like, do you remember when he scored against Italy, he sort of ran over to the corner flag and then he smashed the corner flag, and then he mails very clearly, "Fuck off." And I don't know who he was telling to fuck off, but I mean, he's just one of those players who's like him against the world when he went out there. And interesting character, Bellamy.
Yeah.
I mean, complex, let's say. But I'd quite like to see him as Wales manager one day. I think, you know, it'd be interesting, to say the least.
I was very impressed with him when he did some Sky punditry. Well, maybe it was just maybe a magazine show. I'm not quite sure, without any game being shown. And I think he was there with maybe Jamie Carragher, something like that. Tim Sherwood, something like that anyway. But basically, he's basically asked, okay, so you've been unsuccessful in getting a job. Giggs has already been announced. Give us your thoughts. And again, he's, you know, honest, possibly again to a fault. But he articulated a vision. And at that point, I can remember thinking, right, you've impressed me and motivated me and enthused me about the vision that you suggested that won't get put in place, much more than Giggs had in his official press conferences around whatever vision or whatever he had in mind. I thought it was quite telling. And I don't suppose, you know, Giggs is far less an outspoken person than Bellamy. I mean, you know, find somebody who isn't. He did have a vision. There is a bit more to him than that angry young man caricature, which has some semblance of truth to it, but there is more to him than that. So I wouldn't be against it. And in fact, before Giggs was appointed, I found myself warming. We mentioned it on these. I found myself warming to the idea of Bellamy as manager, which I wasn't necessarily expecting to. So, Liechtenstein?
I went to this game. It was my first senior away game because I had been to the under 21 at Villa Park previous year. It's actually just after I moved over to Innsbruck, and Fedders is only a 2-hour drive from here. So, kind of a home game for me, I suppose. I loved it. I really enjoyed the whole experience, the whole trip. And there were about 500 Wales fans there, which made up about half the crowd. It was a surprising number considering it was a dead rubber against a total minnow at the end of another unsuccessful campaign. But I got a sense that there was still this hardcore there of people who really cared about the team and kind of were willing to invest in the team and the travel and go into these places. And there were people sort of dressed up. I think there were stag parties, certainly one at least, but you could tell the crowd was kind of knowledgeable about the team and stuff, and I really enjoyed that because I'd been sort of part of some crowds in Wales where you got the feeling, you know, people didn't really know a lot about a lot of our players and stuff like that. And the game itself was pretty forgettable, except for Aaron Ramsey cracking free kick late on, took it really well. And Gareth Bale's performance, he was at a time when he was really struggling at Spurs, struggling for games. This whole thing about Spurs not winning when he played, hanging over him, but from the fans, a lot of chants for him. He seemed to take his time afterwards applauding us, and he seemed to appreciate that sort of show of support from the Wales fans at least. And he was superb, just like, you know, okay, playing Liechtenstein, it's a minnow, but just the energy he showed, he was playing left back or left wing back. He was up and down the wing all game. And it was just a reminder that, like, yeah, he's a specialist lad. He's one to, he's really going to come good. Just when he gets a bit more confidence. And he did.
Would this have been around the time that he was almost going to go to Birmingham on loan? Which I think is one of those.
Yeah, or Nottingham Forest was the other one, wasn't it? Or Birmingham City in the Championship.
Alex McLeish was manager there. It's one of those really strange sliding doors type moments. What would have happened had he gone to one of those on loan I mean, you know, maybe the same, maybe everything that happened since would also have happened, but he was struggling. Yeah, you're right. And I think all through his career, actually, whether it's the autobiography or a biography gets written about him, there's been this theme. It's not just been while at Madrid and the last couple of years at Madrid. Joining up with Wales has been that sort of release, has been an opportunity to put club troubles behind him. This isn't just a phenomenon that's come about in the last couple of years. It's been there for a while, actually, which is an interesting kind of trope to keep cropping up.
No, I agree with you. I think, and that's why I think there's a kind of quite a special bond between Bale and Wales fans. And I've seen it a bit this week. I don't know if you've seen the training photos with him, like pretending to play golf. The others are all sort of flexing their muscles. People have been having a laugh about it, and I think it's quite funny. You know, I got into a bit of a discussion with a Wales fan the other day, who was saying, "Come on, this is really disrespectful. If it was an England player, we'd all be having a go at him." You know, I disagreed with him there. I didn't think it was disrespectful at all. It was just having a bit of a laugh about liking golf. It's not like the test show that he's the fittest player there still. If it'd be disrespectful if he'd, you know, he's posting a photo of himself in a hot tub drinking cocktails or something, but that's not Gareth Bale, is it? He's a total professional when it comes to actually playing the game. Yeah, Wales fans most Wales fans are quite quick to jump to his defence because of this relationship that does go back quite a way, where he has seen Wales as his sanctuary, and he's always had a lot of support from our fans. And he seems like he appreciates that because it's one place he knows he's loved, and he hasn't got to deal with stupid politics and people sort of maybe underestimating his ability. I think this period, he wasn't famous at this point or anything, but this is where this strong relationship was really forged.
Forged. You took the words out of my mouth. That relationship was forged in games like this at the end of another disappointing campaign.
On one hand, it's got the air of Toshack's last days already, which might perhaps be a little bit premature given the game after this, which I'm sure we'll talk about in a minute. But what I kind of think now, looking back by that game and having read about it recently, is it's Toshack at peak managing of expectation. So he's going to a lot of great lengths to talk about how difficult it is for young teams like the one that took the field against Liechtenstein, how difficult to make the step up to international football, which is fine. But he's then also talking up Liechtenstein, like there's no easy places to go. You know, these teams are, you know, better than you think, they're technical. And I feel like you can't have it both ways. You can't be talking about how difficult it is to mould a new young team, but also be saying that this team of, you know, nobodies from Liechtenstein are a really big challenge. It's kind of one or the other there. And it doesn't give you the feeling that he was confident going into the next campaign after that. Having said that, we then go and play that friendly against Scotland a month later, and things do start to look a lot more promising.
And one of my regrets is that I wasn't at that game. I had a knee operation about 2 days before, and so couldn't get there. And I can remember rocking up about 37 minutes gone, 38 minutes. I thought, oh, still a bit of the game to go. 3-0, wow. So I tuned in about 2 minutes, I think, after the final goal, and that was about it. And at which point we sort of took a foot off the gas because we were just blowing them away. So I didn't even watch the goals. I've had to only see them ever back on YouTube or on highlights. The first game at the Cardiff City Stadium, of course, which is the other milestone. But again, it was one of those moments where you thought, hang on, is there something clicking here? Because clearly we'd seen these players through, as we've covered already. And suddenly this team just blows the opposition away.
His time was kind of done by this point, because Gary Speed's doing the punditry, and he, without obviously the being able to see into the future, does make comments of, you know, you can see how the success of the youth policy is coming together. He talks about this being a team which might be together for 12 years. A lot of that team were still there, or have been there until very recently. But he also says, if they can turn up for every game, if we can start having a run of games where there aren't all of these withdrawals. And the fact is that by this point, yes, Toshack has done an excellent job of building a young squad of players who could then stay together for years, but the withdrawals would carry on into the next campaign and the forthcoming friendlies against Croatia. So it was a game that was brilliant, but epitomised both the success of Toshack's era, but that probably he wasn't the person who was going to be able to take it forward from there.
I think he'd kind of come to acknowledge by this point as well, because he would say to Brian Flynn, this is all going to be for someone else. They were so young. It was just ridiculous how young that the team, a lot of those teams were putting out were at this time, 2009, 2010. Yeah, I'm not going to be the one to see it through. It was so dynamic, first half. You know, Scotland actually started quite well, and then brilliant passage of play. She ended up with Ramsey sort of down the line, crossing it for Dave Edwards to put in a cracking volley. Ramsey and Ledley combine, and Bale on the left-hand side put it in for Church to put us 2-0 up. And then Ramsey scores a brilliant individual goal himself. And sitting in the pub watching this, just going mad. It was just like, is this finally it? Is Ramsey the player who's going to take us to tournaments? You know, because it all just looked so good in that game. It was so much better than Scotland. And George Burley got sacked, I think, pretty soon after that match.
Yes, another Scotland.
As is often the way when we play Scotland. Bertie Folks, George Burley and Craig Levine all got sacked after losing to us.
Yeah.
Amazingly, Gordon Strachan kept his job after we beat him at Hampden Park.
One of the things that struck me going back at this, the game of the last, that most capped player in our starting 11 that day was Sam Ricketts. I think in some ways that almost kind of, that does sum up the, because of course Ricketts made his debut in Toshack's very first game. So one of those constants has come through. All of those old guard are pretty much gone. Earnshaw and Gabon come on for substitute appearances. Joe Allen comes on for a second cap. Chet Evans started the game and so on and so forth. Also, interestingly, that was, so Dave Edwards scores. That was his third Wales goal in only 18 caps at that point. He didn't score again. But of course, he had that reputation at the club level as having not only a decent goal scoring record, apparently for his clubs. And I won't profess to know the sort of details, but certainly Wolves and Luton fans have got a lot of time for him scoring really important goals as well. But he was one of those players that had that reputation as like getting into the box late and had a good goal scoring record as a midfielder. So 3-18 actually is, you know, pretty good going, and might have suggested that he'd have had a better conversion rate, but it wasn't to be. But a player I've always had a lot of time for, Dave Edwards.
And the latter part of his Wales career, he's also asked to play a lot more.
Yeah,
of a conservative midfield role, probably than he did at club level, you know, coming in for Ledley or Allen. I think that was just a case of what we had to ask them to do. You know, I guess backup squad players when we had Allen and Ledley in the recent years.
That's probably fair.
This was perhaps the only time where he was like a first choice player for Wales, actually, starting lineup, the late Toshack era. And after this, he was Ledley, Ramsey, Allen, Collison if he was fit, and he would come in if someone was injured, and he would sort of play a role. Maybe it wasn't ideal for him, but he would always his best shot, and that made him very endearing. I think that he could fulfill a number of roles and sort of come in and perform so well, even though he kind of knew that, you know, if it, he wouldn't be a star. I'd just like to say that he had a perfectly good goal disallowed in Cyprus before Bale powered that header home.
Yes, good point. Should have been four or three at the very least. So yeah, so we end the year. We go into 2010, Toshack's final year, and it start. It's again. It's one of those games I've got very little memory of. Lost at home to Sweden in the friendly 1-0. Played in Swansea. The February friendly is one of those ones I think has been culled from the calendar, or certainly had been culled long before we moved into this era of Nations League and no friendlies as such. Again, we didn't really have a great record in them. He's just rolling the dice again. It's just lots of different players getting a chance. A young team he puts out. One of my Hill's rare starts. Simon Davis is back in the team. Johan Elmer scores the winner, who was at... Is he Bolton?
He's one of those strikers, isn't he? Because I've watched the goal today. The goal's amazing. Dipped volley from inside the air. Brilliant, brilliant goal. Which seems completely out of character, given that I don't remember him doing anything at Bolton. All I would think of him is one of those sort of strikers who English clubs sign because they're well thought of in their often Scandinavian countries, but then they don't score any goals. Mikael Beck, you might remember him going to sort of Middlesbrough. And he was the next big thing in Danish football. And I guess Bentner's kind of in the same mold as well. That was a hell of a goal he scored against.
another for the legion of worldies and great goals scored against us. Jan Dahl Thomason would be another one.
Yeah, good one.
Cornelius at Cardiff, he didn't do much, did he? He's trying to find everywhere apart from Cardiff, yeah.
I think we've been a bit harsh on Sweden now, because these are, other than Elmander, these are almost exclusively Danish. I've just lumped Scandinavia together all really unfairly when what I'm really trying to say, I guess, is that Danish strikers aren't.
Henrik Larsson, was he any good?
Yeah, he scored one or two.
Yeah.
we have an absolutely appalling record. I don't think we've ever beaten them. Even though they were pretty poor at the Euros in 2016, I'm still glad we're in our group and we didn't play them, because no matter what, they're just one of those teams we never do anything against. And maybe the week before Sweden game was Arsenal against Stoke in the Premier League, and Aaron Ramsey going in for a challenge with Ryan Shawcross. I was watching it at the time and I just felt sick, because you knew he was going to be out for a long, long time, and that was, you know, going to be a hell of a thing for Wales to try and recover from, because Toshak had finally, it seemed, sort of hit upon something in the Scotland game with playing Ramsey at this sort of tip of a midfield four. It all looked so good. It was obvious that was the way that we were going to sort of go and make him the focal point of the team. And then all those plans are sort of in disarray with this one challenge. Yeah, I knew it was sort of over for Toshak, really, the moment that Aaron Ramsey broke his leg.
And it was, I think, literally like the weekend before, wasn't it, this game? Yeah.
Pretty soon, wasn't it? It was pretty,
yeah. So then the next game then we play is that friendly in Croatia. So a year before, we'd been going out to likes of Azerbaijan and had the qualifier there, but again, fairly low-key friendly, but more of a preparatory one at home to Estonia. We go out to Croatia again at the point, at that time, you know, a team and a part of the world where, again, we used to have a pretty dismal record against them. Christian Biro comes on for his debut in his only cap. Andy Dorman makes his debut. But more significantly are two players that then really were part of that golden period under Coleman and the Euros. Hal Robson-Kanu and Neil Taylor come on as substitutes. Taylor was playing in the conference at the time as well with Wrexham.
We were in a conference and he was, you know, it was obvious that he wasn't going to stay in the conference with us. He was far too good for that level. And he went to Swansea a couple of weeks later. I think it might have been the sort of Alan Curtis connection that might have been one of the reasons for that, because Curtis was part of Flynn's backroom team and Taylor had been impressive for a while for the under-21s. And I think about a week before the Croatia game, I'd seen the under-21s because we had a friendly in Parndorf against Austria. It was just after Bezian Idrades, is that his name? The Swansea player who died in his sleep. It was really sad. Austrian under-21 international. So I remember there was a tribute to him before the game. A lot of balloons were let off. So it was Robson-Kanu's debut for the under-21s, and he was very impressive, looked really strong, like physically he looked like he was ready to play senior international football. Neil Taylor was very good. Ribeiro was very good, I thought, in central defence. I think Sam Vokes played as well. He was pretty good. We did lose that game, but that was a goalkeeping error from Chris Maxwell. Like, Toshak's got this friendly out in Croatia, and as usual at this time of year, he had a whole bunch of pullouts. So as usual, you get on the phone to Flynn and say, look, we had a load pull out. We need you to send over a few players. We need a forward. We need a fullback, blah, blah, blah. And so Flynn thought, okay, Robson-Kanu, I've got him in the setup now after sort of a year of trying. How do you fancy playing, you know, senior international football? So his under-21 cap and then his senior cap came in very quick succession. He sort of never really looked back from there. I think he only played two or three more times for the under-21s because he was physically ready to play with the big boys. And Neil Taylor, it had been a problem position for a while, left back. I don't think we'd really had a really strong regular left back since the mid-90s, since Mark Bowen perhaps, that sort of that era, and asking people like Gary Speed to fill in that position, because the likes of Steve Jenkins and Rob Edwards, etc., but possibly weren't really up to it at international level. So, yeah, this is a significant one as well. He's had a good career, Neil Taylor. He's a bit more celebrated than he is, you know, because there are plenty on a bit of a downer with Taylor, but would have struggled, you know, until the emergence of Ben Davis if he hadn't emerged at that time, I think.
The situation as it was then is exactly as I talked about a few minutes ago with reference to what Gary Speed said against the Scotland game. And within two games, it's become very apparent that Scotland game and Aaron Ramsey's performance in that Scotland game has glossed over where we are as a Welsh first team in terms of competing with other people, with other countries rather. So, yes, lots and lots of good new players coming through, but 14 players pulled out of that squad for the Croatia game. And at that point, you'd think if the Scotland game meant a huge amount, and bear in mind that was a dreadful Scotland team, it's really, really clear that people don't want to come and play for this Wales team. And I think that was the real, real worry by the end of that, the Toshack reign. And
you're right. And of course, the criticism of Toshack over the years, of course, was, you know, he kept falling out with players and so on. But the reality is that when you've got 14 players dropping out, when you've got the Finland game a few months before where we can only name a bench of four, you know, whatever the motive, beyond, you know, not being available, and Bellamy wasn't available for the Sweden friendly, for example. Again, there were rumours and conjecture about what was, not rumours so much, but there was conjecture around, you know, was this indicating that he was going to be finishing? And he's come out since and said that he had to be persuaded to not retire when Gary Speed took the job. So, you know, he didn't turn up for the two games with Brian Flynn, and there were some clouds around that time as well. So yeah, no, you're right. The criticism never really went away. But I think what's interesting by looking at it in this sort of forensic detail is what tends to happen is the criticism is leveled at Toshack, but they use the wrong players to justify it. I think actually, if you look at it a little bit more intricately, then actually you see that argument has a lot more is a lot more convincing when you actually look at the cases of some other players that don't necessarily come to mind. I feel obliged as well, I should point out, that Mark Bradley also made his debut in that game and was his only cap. I don't imagine that he was a player that was ever going to achieve great things. I think injury curtailed his career. But all I would say about Mark Bradley is his picture on Wikipedia, one word, dreamboat. That's all I've got to say for you. I think he's really enjoying life after football, that's all I'll say. The new season starts. We have an August friendly. Not even we can mess up a home friendly against Luxembourg. Down in Llanelli, back down there.
5-1, was it?
We've got very good stocks. Yeah, it was. It was 5. Yeah, we let them score.
It was a couple of significant moments for the squad. Simon Davis withdrew from the squad and then retired. And he hadn't played for a while. I think he had a lot of injury. I think maybe. But that was the last we saw of him for Wales. But Robert Earnshaw did carry on. That was his 50th cap. The game out in Luxembourg. And for someone who probably, I think we may have discussed in previous parts, for someone who probably wasn't a Toshack player and maybe didn't get quite as fair a crack of the whip as maybe you'd hope given his goal scoring and how I guess senior he was in the squad. The fact that he hung around, he wanted to keep playing for as long as he could, you know, that was a great achievement for him to get to 50 caps.
Yeah, he's a full-time philosopher now, of course. I think he was almost a victim of circumstance in that the game at this point is favouring lone strikers, isn't it? And there's a certain fad and fashion. You always find outliers who are going around different things or sticking to a very kind of traditional template and format. But the international game in particular was all about lone strikers, and he's just not that striker. The number of players he played alongside at Cardiff who just laid goals on a plate for him, I'm thinking people like Peter Thorne, you know, he needed that big target man alongside him. He was never going to succeed.
Perhaps less significant in terms of the squad. Well, maybe it's mean to say less significant, but Steve Morrison, is that his first game, the friendly against Luxembourg?
It is, yeah. Yeah, who I suppose conceivably could have been more of that target man type person. But again, I think it was only ever really going to be a lone striker, but probably is more suited to that role. He was at Millwall at the time. And one of those players, for some reason, I don't know, some players, they never warm themselves to fans quite from the off.
No, he's really...
In many respects, a lot of similarities with Hal Robson-Kahn, for instance, just a couple of months before makes his debut. But some players just seem to warm to fans a bit sooner than others, or warm themselves to fans.
Yeah, he was really just a functional championship, quite old-fashioned style centre-forward. I know he had a brief period in the Premier League with Norwich, but I think maybe at that time, Sam Vokes was promising, but I think he got... Was that about around the time he got quite a bad injury? So he probably was out of contention for a while. Though we had this kind of glut of new young centre-forwards coming through, I think there were times when they weren't available or perhaps weren't progressing as fast as we hoped. And maybe he was useful to have in and around the squad for a while, but was never really the long-term answer. Quite old as well, I think, by the time he made his debut. Yeah. He was a late starter in...
Yeah, yeah. Well, and when you mentioned Evans, for me, Chet Evans at this point was the striker that I was sort of pinning my hopes on, because he seemed to be able to adapt to different roles. He seemed to have enough about him to play a bit more of a lone target man striker type role, but also had quick feet and was a bit of a fox in the box, as they say, for obvious reasons. That never came about.
We're on to Ian Negro away. Ramsey was missing for us, and Jovetic was missing for them. So the two sort of star young playmakers were both missing it. The star man in midfield, it turned out to be them who got a lot better. They had Marko Vucinic up front, Juventus striker. I would say he was probably a difference, although sort of they were better than us. Never really got to grips with them until the end of the game, really. And as Earnshaw hit the bar, I think. But it was just sort of like this desperate last sort of surge, really. And that was it. You start with a loss, it's sort of difficult to come back from that at the start of a campaign. And it proved difficult for Toshak to come back from that as well, because he didn't. It's his last game.
At the start of a campaign, losing to Montenegro looks just very similar to the kind of early defeats or early bad performance we've had against countless Eastern European countries over years of qualifying. But actually, that was a good team. They finished second in that group and went through to the playoffs. They finished above Switzerland, who were a decent team. They only lost two games in the entire campaign, one to England and one to us. With hindsight, given that Church hit the bar and had a goal disallowed late on, and if we've steeped a draw there, actually, as the group goes on, maybe things might have been different. I don't think they generally would have been, because of all the other things we've talked about around how the squad was. Actually, that was not an embarrassing defeat to a minnow. It was a nap to what was actually a pretty good team.
Well, they were quite a new at that point. They'd obviously been lumped in with Serbia previously and obviously the Yugoslavia before that. They're still trying to climb their way up the rankings and that sort of sense of identity and team spirit and stuff, maybe. A lot of playing for pride, playing for the flag, that kind of thing with these sorts of countries. And again, just another campaign where it's another slow start, losing the first qualifier. According to Toshak in the press conference, he wanted to stay on for the next two, which were a double header. It does appear to be the case that the FAW have gone, actually, no, that's it. They sort of make the call, but he did want to hang around Toshak for the next couple of games.
Yeah, I remember somebody likening it to going to the top diving board when you're a kid and sort of looking down and thinking about jumping down, but being a bit scared to do it. But then one of your mates would push and you haven't got any choice in the matter anyway. It was a bit like that, because he was obviously thinking about it. And then the FAW and Jonathan Ford was in place by this point. Very slick corporate man. He worked for huge corporations, not used to how things are in football. I suppose he just had this kind of idea, well, this guy's kind of failed. He's had several years and he's not qualified team. Let's get rid of him. And perhaps it was time by that point. Someone younger with more in touch with 21st century football was given a go as manager, and someone the players maybe could relate to a bit more, because Toshak did things with a generational divide, which he found very hard to bridge. There's a number of players who just complained about his methods being old school. That was the phrase that came up a lot.
I would have willingly done the next two matches, and I said earlier, from the outset, before the friendly against Luxembourg, I spoke with the president and said, I think, look, after the first three matches, I think we should sit down and assess the situation whilst you've got time, a five-month gap.
If you read Dave Edwards' book, I think there's a quote in there that said, because of the work that Toshak did and the number of debuts he handed out, by the time that Gary Speed was given a job, we were ready for him. The groundwork had been laid. Speed didn't have to hand out many debuts. I think his one debut in the year that he was manager was Adam Matthews. For me, for all the frustrations, I do think Toshak did more good than bad, and I think his greatest achievement as Wales manager, I've said this in a piece I wrote about him, is that he successfully turned us from being a British side into a European one. And if you look at maybe the likes of Scotland, and they're kind of struggling with that sort of transition, perhaps a bit. Football's more sophisticated now. You just watch the highlights of the games from the 70s and 80s. Stuff they've been showing on BBC Wales recently, like the old games, the technical aspect of the game, tactical aspect of the game. He's sort of brought that in for us when other managers perhaps wouldn't. Thinking about that side of the game, it's a more sophisticated style, which ended up serving us so well. And if we'd just sort of done what we usually did, which was just pick the 11 best players and hope for the best, there's no way we'd have hit those heights and reached the semi-final of a tournament. So as frustrating as the Toshak years were, Welsh football owes the man a hell of a lot. And I've got to head off now, but it's been fun.
he is very polarizing, and I don't disagree that the bringing through the youth is important. The style of football is important, and those people who champion Toshak's era do point to that. How much an international manager, even with the restructuring of the youth levels, can really be the only factor behind a change of style, I don't know. I mean, this is an era where football in the English leagues, where most of we draw our players from, was changing as well. It is still there in the English game, I know, but the Premier League certainly, and to a certain degree, I suppose, the Championship were also evolving. And the fact is, a manager drawing on the Bales and the Ramseys, who are growing up at club level, not just through a Welsh youth system playing that way. I mean, any manager should have looked at that. And that's not to undermine what Toshak did. If I was to be a little bit facetious about it, I might ask, are the achievements things that couldn't have been achieved had we paid John Toshak a consultancy fee in 2004 and said, here you are, write a report, including that report, linking up the age groups from 16s to 21s, put Brian Flynn in charge, think about the style of play, but bring in a manager who's got the modern footballing now, who understands sports science, who understands the modern tactical aspects of the game. Because for all he changed our style, he wasn't able to game-to-game organise a tactical plan to combat opponents. He wasn't able to organise effective training sessions that players bought into, particularly senior players. He didn't have the character to build bridges with players who maybe he didn't get on so with, and to perhaps vary his approach to get the best out of players. And he alienated people in a few cases. So I broadly agree with Leon. I'm not quite so vociferous in quite how much I think he should be celebrated for his time as Wales manager. But I absolutely accept that, you know, there's a very good chance that much of what we've enjoyed since he left could have been very different without him. But it was a very, very, to my mind, bleak period of following and watching the Welsh senior team. I think that's been glossed over a little bit in the way we debate Toshak's legacy now.
That consultancy fee probably would have been a lot cheaper than several contracts as well.
and I'm being facetious about that, but I'm using it to make the point that when it came to day-to-day and game-to-game dealing with the first team, I think he was a man out of his time. His days of being successful with a squad of modern footballers was behind him. And the appointment of Brian Flynn, the restructuring of that was genius. But then, as we know from Leon's book and from previous discussion of these podcasts, a lot of that credit has to go to him, to Brian Flynn as well. But, you know, to be fair to Toshak, he's the man behind that who puts that in place. So credit where credit's due.
And I think, Todd, to be fair to Toshak, I think he's always been quite effusive in his praise for Flynn. It's all well and good giving somebody that job description, if you like. That person has still got to go out and implement it and perform in that role. I think as a manager, he's the sort of guy that would bristle if a director of football type role was imposed above him at a club, which is not to say that he hasn't coached at clubs and managed at clubs that have got big, strong, dominant personalities, you know, the likes of Real Madrid and how they elect their presidents and things like that and appoint them. And those figures tend to meddle in affairs. It's just part of the culture, I suppose, of those sorts of clubs and those sorts of posts. But actually, I think the irony is in how you sort of, you know, critiqued him in there is, or critiqued his reign there, is that actually what he had to offer in terms of vision, in terms of a tactical astuteness, and maybe being able to look at opponents and things like that, would actually have suited as an assistant to a younger manager, giving that younger manager the advice and the wisdom that was there, but letting them be a little bit more in touch with things that, you know, you just alluded to around the management, around some of the sports science side of things, around that, the whole preparation of camp, you know, the days away, stuck in hotels and travelling, etc., that Toshak seemed to have been a little bit outdated with. And I think there's an irony there that the sort of role that he might have performed and had quite a lot of impact and input with is the sort of role that he wouldn't want if he was the manager. And he's sort of inverting it a little bit. It's not somebody coming in international football. It tends to be the elder person as the assistant. But I think I've got some sympathy with what Leon says around the style and maybe making us a little bit more. Because certainly the things I think the speed wanted us to do in terms of approach tactically, it wouldn't have been as big a jump as it might have been had Toshak been there. Whether we had to put up with Toshak for as long, is another question. And I'm sure there were other coaches out there that could also have implemented that change. And I guess that's kind of what you're getting at as well.
And I suppose, you know, to be fair to him, I'm checking in Bale and Ramsey's development at clubs like Spurs and Arsenal as a counter argument to that. But actually, if you think about some of the players we've been talking about recently who come through, your Kings, your Edwards, your Robson Carlos, there's players who played in those Flynn age groups, possibly at a time when they weren't playing a lot of club football, certainly not senior club football. Then being steeped in that culture through the age groups during those 12 years, and certainly players who've come through since being steeped in that culture through the age groups, it is going to have a big impact on their development, despite the much more occasional getting together of international football compared to club football. So I don't want to sound like I don't think that was an important legacy. Of course it is.
I agree, and I think that my final point really, which is perhaps what we wrap up on, is that those players of that era then, so it's the Edwards, it's the Robson Carnos, generally, it is very hard to find criticism of Toshack. Criticism tends to come from that group of players that preceded them. So it's Davis, it's Gabaldon, it's Collins, etc. And I think there's something in that. Now, whether that's just that these players deferentially, gratefully, he was the manager that gave them their first caps, that gave them the chance. Maybe it's just that, and it's just courtesy being extended. I don't know. There's a decent chance that it might just be that. But I also think that there's probably something in it as well, because I think some of these players, like Edwards, they seem to be intelligent people who, you know, have views on the game and who would be prepared to probably air them, is my gut feeling.
I think it's probably a bit of both. I think those players are perfectly right to feel like, you know, here's a manager who backed me to come through and pick and show loyalty to him, and they achieved under him. So, of course, they would feel like that, and rightly so. A lot of those players, if you read Chris Wather and Phil Stead or whatever, they prefix their praise with saying other players had their opinions. So even with those comments, they belie a knowledge that there was a tension in the dressing room, that it wasn't a united squad behind the manager, for all that they themselves perhaps were seeing him more positively. But there were actually, you know, there are those characters from the older generation. Carl Robinson speaks very positively Toshack and talks about, you know, looking to sort of lap up what he could learn from Toshack as he thought about a future managerial career himself. So I think for all the balance is probably towards those who got frustrated with Toshack's methods. There are those voices who, of course, would be taken seriously, who owe him a debt and talk very, very positively about him, and fair enough.
And who knows, there could be people that come along after gigs in the managerial hot seat who will be applying stuff that they've learned from Toshack, or not applying stuff that they learned from Toshack. So you could still be having an influence for years to come. Gents, it's been an absolute pleasure. So those were the Toshack years. Thanks for the numerous comments to date, following the other parts. Grateful as ever. And I guess this means it's just Bobby Gould you've got to do next.
This is the one I've most been looking forward to. It's my youth. One of my kids said to me today, I said, oh, we could come and be a guest on one of your podcasts. I said, they're 12 years old. I said, what on earth do you know about Following Wales? What could a 12-year-old knowledge can they possibly have about what it is to follow Wales? You can only know that if you know about the Bobby Gould era. So. Yeah. You know, young people who think they know about Wales need an education in Wales under Bobby Gould. And it's a matter of public service that we have to do it at some point.
We will do it so that others don't have to. All these kids thinking of Wales ensconced in the top 20 of the FIFA World Rankings and players playing at Real Madrid.
Some of you on more than one occasion have said to me, would you go back and ask them to come back? And I say to you, no, never, never, never. And maybe that's a fault of mine. But my pride, if you like, I would never, ever do that. La, 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 la.